It's all here, ready, fresh as zombie takeout. Welcome to episode 255 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got a little bit of listener submitted from the person who requested this week's movie, Roberto Suarez. This was on our Facebook page. In reference to last week's episode, he said, "Hey guys, Joe Hill is also the writer of a fantastic graphic novel story titled Lock and Key. I can't recommend this series highly enough. It has been compiled into 6 trade paperback volumes that you should be able to find at your local library. It is an excellent read, begging to be adapted for a film or TV. A pilot TV episode was filmed a few years back, but never picked up by the networks. If you have a chance, get a copy and prepare for a great read. I have been hearing about Lock and Key for years. Apparently, it's kind of legendary among comic geeks."
I was going to say, I have not heard about this.
And yeah, apparently the TV pilot that was made is one of the few TV pilots that you can't even find like on YouTube. Because you can find most pilot episodes that never aired on YouTube.
That's cool.
The Buffy pilot, for Buffy fans out there, if you haven't seen it, it's rather amusing.
I gotta watch me some My Mother the Car.
But yeah. So I've been hearing about it for years, Lock and Key, and I definitely want to check it out. 6 trades is a little daunting, because that's a... Well, I don't do the library, I do Comixology. I actually buy the digital ones.
Oh.
So that's a little daunting, 6 trades. Maybe I'll get the first one and see what it's about. Anyway, on to this week's movie, which was requested by Roberto, and it is from 1976, Logan's Run. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by those fucking crystals. Please don't use them in your next science fiction film.
And also brought to you by young people. Never turn your back on them. They're the devil.
Word is bond.
All right, so we have a very happy and perfect future.
Supposedly.
Okay, so...
Community, stability, what was the third one?
Oh, I forget. But anyway, they're living in a dome. It's pretty much an M. Night Shyamalan world where, of course, there's, you know, nothing wrong outside the dome. Spoiler alert.
I didn't mind the village.
I didn't think it was that bad either. But anyway, and I say jokingly the spoiler alert thing about this because if you couldn't see that coming, that the world was okay outside, I can't help you. But anyway, there was supposed to be a big catastrophe, a nuclear fallout, most likely, that they claim at least. And this society has taken up under this dome, this entire city. And the deal is, as soon as you turn 30, you have to report to something called Carousel, which is a big spectacle.
Looks a lot like some 70s musical theater thing.
Cirque du Soleil, people becoming sparkly things and dying or becoming or renewing. It was
swirly
kind of
fire.
A...
This was the proto-swirly fire.
God,
they got it from this.
No, this is just more of a sparkle thing. This was sparkling motion.
Oh, bye. They were committed.
They were very committed. The thing is, though, at first I was kind of confused as to what was happening, because was that them being renewed? Was it not? They then explained later that they've never seen anyone be renewed. That it was just one of those myths that they told people to keep them going.
This movie might possibly make some interesting statements about religion, but I don't know if they were intentional or not.
We'll get into the political stuff on this in a bit. But so the other role, of course, the one group of people in society who have a role are the Sandmen.
Well, the Sandmen and the Cleaners, I think they were called.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the Cleaners.
Yeah, who clean up after the people the Sandmen kill.
So they're taking they take the people who don't buy into the system and kill them.
Hmm.
Or terminate them, as they, you know, euphemize everything.
Right.
So the problem is that there's a... that Logan finds one that has an Ankh on his around his neck.
Well, he finds it in his effects, actually.
Okay, he finds one with an Ankh, and the computer does this weird thing where it wants him to come closer to tell him a secret. Like, what?
Yeah.
All right, and gives him a secret mission to infiltrate the runners by taking away pretty much the last 4 years of his life,
mm-hmm.
and you know, making him become a runner himself to find these people and destroy them and destroy Sanctuary to continue the good of society. Now, he goes into this. I mean, he's fully bought into this up to a point. Where even he is, you know, when he finally does get towards the end, he's turning the computer on so they can track him. But then as it goes on, he begins to realize there are flaws in this system. And of course, they reach the Planet of the Apes,
mm-hmm.
minus the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm. And, well, they have the Washington Monument, though.
Exactly. They have the Washington Monument and other Washington landmarks. They run into a cat man, a crazy cat man.
Yeah, not like a guy who's half cat, like an anime thing. He's a crazy cat guy. He's an old guy with a lot of cats.
Wow, wouldn't that have made a different movie, huh?
I just thought of that because on my anime show, we were talking about a cat girl yesterday.
It would have been like an H.G. Wells time machine thing.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
The cat people are ruling the world.
Mm-hmm.
But no, and then suddenly he decides, Logan decides he must return.
Hmm. To spread the truth to the people to under the dome.
Spread the truth, and hilarity ensues.
Hmm. Now, I rarely talk about the trailers on this show, you know, when we're talking about the actual movies.
Yeah, I did not see the trailer for this.
This trailer is particularly interesting because it features a voiceover. And it's the typical 70s voiceover guy. It's not Don LaFontaine. It's the guy who was doing them before him. But the beginning of it, before he starts talking about the plot, sounds a lot like an Apple ad about how it's this perfect world and, you know, everybody's happy. Kind of creepy, particularly when you think about Apple ads and how, you know, how they describe things.
Yeah.
And also, the movie starts with this bit of text explaining the world. And they say that the servo mechanisms take care of anything you could want. The servo mechanisms, so robots.
Right, and yet we hardly saw any robots.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was the computer who was ruling the entire thing, and right. Then there was whatever he was using to get his date that night.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't sure at first if that was a transporter or if they just, like, created her on the spot, but apparently she was in a database and she was just transported there.
Yeah. I mean, they did a good job of explaining things when they needed to be explained,
mm-hmm.
but it's just very, I guess you could call it paranoid.
Although they never explained why they needed to die at 30. I was waiting for a big reveal at the end, but there was nothing.
I'm curious about the book. I just think they were trying to keep a balance.
Mm. In the book, really, they die at 21.
Yes. Isn't that nuts?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 30, you're kind of like, yeah, I guess. But really, I mean...
I'm well past 30. I don't want to think, you know, I'm not going to say, well, I guess. I've been playing guitar for 30 years.
But the thing is, the book, which was written in the mid-60s,
mm-hmm.
is just overly paranoid about culture.
30 actually makes sense in that context, because it's the whole don't trust anyone over 30 thing.
Well, right. But that in the book, it's about whether you've become an adult.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's,
And then right. It turns into, the current version is on a show on Netflix called Between. If you remember a Showtime series years ago, Jeremiah, where everybody who's an adult dies of this illness.
It's the bullfrog, right?
But anyway, it's
a good friend of yours.
It becomes a situation where the kids rule the world.
But here's the intro from the book I've got in front of me here. The seeds of the Little War were planted in a restless summer during the mid-1960s with sit-ins and student demonstrations as youth tested its strength. By the early 1970s, over 75% of people living on Earth were under 21 years of age.
Because everyone older died in the war, I guess.
I don't know. What kind of crack do you have to smoke to come up with that stat, though?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
This is very insane. This is very soft science fiction. You know, there's not a lot of actual science involved.
It's much more of a rant than a science fiction. I mean, to just be that paranoid that now, well, we're interested in young people and beautiful people.
Yeah.
That we're going to... I mean, yes... We have dumbed ourselves down for it. We haven't killed ourselves for it either.
It says we only want the young and beautiful people, but it also kind of is, in many ways, like Brave New World, which is the one I mentioned at the beginning of the plot summary. It's kind of a criticism of hedonism.
True. Well, yeah, it's definitely a criticism of the entire hippie movement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Even, I mean, to actually... call out the sit-ins and everything, like, yeah. No rocking the boat and stuff or anything.
That's what this was trying to say. I didn't connect to that. It's what if the hippies ruled the world?
Yeah.
Huh. Which explains the carousel scene, because that looked straight out of, like, early Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Definitely. I mean, there should have been people roller skating around, or people in cat suits.
Yeah.
Those practically were cat suits, now that I think about it, those spandex things. Yeah.
And I think I can sum up the first, say, 30 to 45 minutes of this movie with two words. Robes and crystals. It was like a Rush concert in the Fortress of Solitude. Like an early Rush concert. Like if you've ever seen like 70s, you know, on the 2112 era Rush, those costumes that they wore on stage. Imagine those
same year.
On the entire cast. And they're playing in the Fortress of Solitude. That's all of the Under the Dome section of this movie.
This came out the same year as 2012.
True. So I guess it was just kind of the fashion at the time.
It's supposed to be 2116 too.
Mm.
But that was from the book. So I mean,
yeah, I think they did push it forward. It was 2270 something, I think, in the movie.
Yeah. That the world's population didn't shift in like 5 years.
Also, I completely forgot that his, you know, run was originally an undercover job. They deliberately aged him and said, you're going to go, you know, undercover to find this sanctuary place. I should mention that I have not seen this since I was a kid and I barely remember it. One of my older siblings was watching it on TV in like the early 80s.
I don't think I focused on it long enough to say I've watched it before, actually.
Really, the only thing that stuck were the Peter Ustinov scenes. But we'll get to those. Because he kind of saves the movie for me.
Really? I just thought it was so, you know, so self-serving, the whole, you know, like, here's a good old white man to, like, make things right again.
Yeah, fair enough. I just like, loved his performance.
It's kind of like a brother.
Especially after, you know, complaining about the fake American accents last week, he actually did a really good American accent.
Yeah, about that. I should have given you some listeners submitted. Hugh Laurie.
Okay, yeah, good. Although once you notice he's British, once you know he's British, it does kind of sound really fake. Up until then, it's really good. And certainly way better than anyone in Horns was doing.
Anthony LaPaglia, who, you know, starred in the show Without a Trace.
He's British?
He's Australian.
Okay.
Which is quite a shocker, actually.
Yeah, okay, that's a good one.
I mean, he pulls off, you know, the New York area, you know.
Pretty well, yeah.
New Jersey, you know, kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Really easily. And then you see him outside, and you're like, ah, g'day, you know, we were all on the street. I was like, wait, what?
Well, yeah, and another one I just thought of, and I don't know if he pulled it off nearly as well, is Rick Springfield. When he was, you know, acting in the 80s, you know, he was doing an American accent. Because he's actually Australian as well.
Rick Springfield?
Mm-hmm.
He must have lost the accent altogether.
Well, he's probably lost it by now, but I mean, when he was, you know, on General Hospital in the 80s, he had an Australian accent.
I was going to say, because I heard him in an interview just like a month or so ago, and was like...
Yeah, it's like Mel Gibson. He doesn't really have much of an accent anymore either.
Yeah, you're right.
Anyway.
Way off course.
Yeah, back to Logan's run.
Reeling back.
So he, you know, to use the British expression, does a runner to go undercover to find Sanctuary to bust it. He has to get through some obstacles on the way. Kind of a Warriors vibe.
Oh, yeah,
definitely. Particularly when he got to the cathedral, Billy's group.
That whole thing felt like that, because they were just, you know, now he's got to make it through the cathedral.
Mm-hmm. And then the cave, yeah.
Yeah, then there's the cave.
With the great Roscoe Lee Brown in a robot suit. I don't know why they had to put him in the suit, but apparently it fell over a number of times. He was in there. They could have just used something animatronic and had him do the voiceover.
That was probably the biggest what the fuck scene for me.
Yeah.
That whole sequence was just, I don't know. It didn't make any sense almost. Like what they were being used as food.
Yeah. Because apparently a lot of seafood was coming through that area initially, but that dried out and, you know, he was, you know, and Box, the robot, was freezing the seafood for a food source for somebody, whoever programmed them, I guess, whoever created them.
Were they implying that they were using them as food for the city?
Oh, I didn't get the city implication. That's interesting.
Who else?
I didn't think about that.
But the other thing is, though, if they're being frozen, when are they being used as food?
Well, I imagine they're removed from cold storage at some point and prepared.
I mean, it's kind of what I was assuming was going on in the first place anyway, of taking the people that get old and then cycling them in, you know, somehow back.
Makes sense.
It is kind of like the whole thing of being renewed in one sense or another.
Incidentally, that scene in the ice cave would have been a lot trippier because apparently there was a scene where Box wanted to make a nude ice sculpture of Logan and Jessica. It was cut for the rating to, you know, to keep a PG. Although there was quite a bit of nudity in this. I don't know if it got a PG.
With the late 70s, mm-hmm. that they were able to get rid of. They were very forgiving of nudity in films back
Although,
then.
Although, it always shocks me when I see gratuitous nudity in anything made before the 80s. I just forget that they could do that back then.
It was much more casual back at that point, though. I mean, it wasn't the full walkabout, of course. Yeah. But I mean...
For that, you have to go to the Swedish stuff.
You get the coupling reference, man?
Yes.
Jenny Gutter?
Mm-hmm.
Walkabout?
Oh, I can't see her name, see her, without thinking of Steve from Coupling.
Okay.
I was already there. Now, overall, I liked the movie, but there was one thing that really irritated me, and I've complained about this in movies before.
I can't imagine what you're going to say.
The crowbarred in romantic subplot.
Oh, I thought it was going to be crystals.
Oh, no, well, yeah, of course, crystals. I've already complained about the crystals.
Fucking crystals.
At least they were just kept to the things in the palm. They weren't, you know, magical.
Or they at were least like, in the book, magical. They were like flower palm.
They were a flower thing in the book, yeah.
Yeah, to make it like the flower children, of course.
But, okay, so she takes him to Sanctuary, and it's established that her intention is that ultimately to kill him, because he's a cop. Yeah. And he's the one to bust the place. And of course they have to fall for each other. The movie would have worked perfectly without that.
You think so?
Oh yeah. It was completely unnecessary. Have them bond to some extent, because they're stuck with each other, but they don't need to get romantic.
I couldn't have seen this working without that, though, because they would have killed each other. Literally.
Well, I think it would have been more fun if they were bickering the entire way. There needed to be more of that Tracy Hepburn kind of bickering thing going.
Perhaps.
They got along way too well.
Yeah, okay, I can see your point there. Now, what really... I think just the general storytelling is really what didn't work here. I mean, granted, I don't agree with the ideas this guy has, but it could have made a very interesting story. But it felt... The actual plot felt very forced, you know? There didn't seem like a logic from point A to point B.
Yeah.
Francis being this crazed, obsessed Sandman, who just wouldn't give up the ghost.
Right.
I mean, a man who literally sees the sun for the first fucking time, sees the outside world, ignores it all just to try to kill his friend.
And really just to prove himself in his job is really what it came down to. It was never explicitly stated, but the subtext I got was that he was kind of under Michael York. I can't think of the character's name.
Logan.
It's just in the title.
The title.
Francis was kind of in Logan's shadow, and taking him down would kind of, you know, give him a chance to step out of it. That was all subtext. I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you could have said more that he had a thing for Logan himself.
Or they could have gone that way, yeah.
Yeah, and they kind of did imply that things were more casual in this era. But,
no, it's based on the sexual revolution.
You're very right. And they did, you know, imply that it wouldn't have been out of the question. Mm-hmm. However, it just didn't make any sense. And then, just when you thought it didn't make any sense, his death scene was just so badly choreographed.
Oh, yeah. Well, that whole fight in the Capitol, is it the Capitol building?
I think it's the Senate. It is the Capitol building, well, part of the building.
That whole fight scene kind of made no sense, because, okay, he's got the gun trained on them. She sneaks up, throws the gun away. Instead of going after the gun, he jumps at Logan.
Yeah.
And then somehow these guys who were raised in this hippie, peaceful society, who are probably only trained with guns, know how to you know, fight hand-to-hand and use weapons, like melee weapons.
In the book, they were trained in some form of martial arts.
Oh, okay.
Which, of course, is never actually exhibited here. Mm-hmm. It's more of just a random game of grab ass. But, I mean, the whole... He used a flagpole.
Yeah.
He didn't hit him that hard with it.
No.
And I'm like, wait a minute. He's dead from that? Are you shitting me? It was just terribly choreographed.
Yeah. Well, it was just a bad fight scene in general.
Yeah, very just true.
From a writing standpoint, from a... blocking standpoint.
Right. That is true. How would you choreograph that to actually make it make sense?
Well, yeah.
Because it's just the whole principle of he hit him with the flagpole and it killed him with it.
Well, okay, you could kill him with the flagpole, but you have to pierce him.
Yes.
Maybe
yes.
Do that.
He thwacked him over the head with the flagpole, not even enough to break the flagpole. No.
And then hit him in the back. Again, not enough to break the pole.
Right. That was enough to kill him, according to...
This is a piece of wood that's been sitting there collecting dust for hundreds of years. So it would have broken pretty easily. And again, I got to point out, they never explain why they're killing everybody at 30. At first I thought it was maybe to cover up some kind of conspiracy in the past when they, you know, got to DC and saw that everything was, you know, okay. You know, maybe they started killing the older people because they would remember it.
Right, you wish... That there was some point to that, but the movie took the point away, you know?
Though I didn't like the choice of DC for Sanctuary.
But that wasn't Sanctuary.
Yeah, it wasn't actually Sanctuary. I have in my notes that when they get there, it kind of feels like, okay, this is Sanctuary. But it didn't turn out to be, no.
It could have been, actually.
Yeah, but I think DC was an interesting choice. Maybe a little nod to, Planet of the Apes was New York. I'm thinking about the Burton version. They referenced DC.
Which looked very similar to it.
Yeah. Also,
I guess you could actually say Planet of the Apes is Jersey.
Well, yeah, technically, yeah. Because Statue of Liberty, right?
Yeah.
Now, when they get to the gravestones, and you know, of course, they've never seen gravestones. This is Logan and Jessica.
Right.
And she reads, beloved husband, beloved wife, on one of them. She's never seen these words before. And yet she reads them like she's said them, you know, like she's, you know, very familiar with them, like their normal conversation.
You saying Jenny Gutter was not casted for her acting ability?
I actually don't have that much of a problem with her performance. It was just that one part. Because, you know, if you see a word, if you have to say a word that you've never seen before, you're likely going to say it as a question.
True.
Because you're not sure your pronunciation. Like, and you're probably going to mispronounce it. Hmm?
Is the E silent on wife?
Exactly. You're probably going to mispronounce it, too. So when she said them both perfectly and very casually, it just kind of stood out, particularly when they point out that she has no idea what they mean.
Is the U a long U or a short U?
Right.
Husband?
And, of course, now we get to the enjoyable part. Peter Ustinov. And, yeah, you make a good point about, you know, it, the old white man saving the day.
It was just so, like, here, everybody, I brought an old white man back. And all the kids gathered around him, and they said, we're saved.
But after all of the scenery chewing, and I don't mean that in a good way this time, that the rest of the cast was doing, having a nice, big, heavy hitter right there, just, you know, giving a brilliant but very understated performance was a relief. Because even Michael York, all due respect, was kind of chewing the scenery.
Yeah. Oh, the two, him and Richard Jordan, in the beginning especially, you know, well, Michael York looked like blonde Kelso, of course. But, yeah. I mean, just being so diabolical and everything.
Yeah.
But overly diabolical, of course.
Right. Though I would like to know how the Crazy Catman, Ustinov's character, the old man, as he's credited in the movie, he's never actually given a name. And he's, yeah, like, at the end of the credits, and it's, you know, the best actor in the film. Anyway, how did he escape the dome?
Oh, I think he was just born outside of it.
Well, okay, more how did his parents escape it better?
Well, yeah, that he doesn't know, of course.
Going further, yeah, true, he doesn't know. It just would have been interesting to find out how he...
I kind of gathered that they either somehow escaped it or...
Never were a part of it.
Or never
were a part, I assumed. Yeah. But how do you... It seems like something that, you know, would be pretty much society-wide.
It seemed like people were escaping, not frequently, but there were enough.
Well, yeah, there were quite a few frozen for food.
Well, right, there's that. The computer said there was over 1,000 unaccounted for, which was okay. Like, really?
Huh. Well, actually, that's an interesting point. And you would assume that the frozen people were the ones who had been on the carousel and were being recycled.
Yeah.
I assumed that they were escapees. That Box was just capturing. Maybe they were both. Maybe they were letting people escape and then Box was, you know, processing them.
I don't know. That would have been something either that they could have just done without altogether or could have explained.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to come up with some explanation for some of this nonsense.
I mean, it was, of course, also the moment they Michael York's best line of the film... We need to take off these clothes before they freeze to us.
Yeah.
And then let's put them right back on.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I gotta shout out Jerry Goldsmith, who did the score. He came up with two distinctive sound palettes. Strings, keyboards, and abstract electronics for In the City and Full Orchestra for Outside, which
gave it
a really nice punctuation. You knew when you were inside because you were getting all of the you know, found sounds and electronic stuff. And then you get outside and it's very conventional and orchestral.
In the Planet of the Apes, you mean?
Yes. Oh, also, there was a Nixon reference that got cut.
Really?
One of the presidential portraits. And apparently, old man had a line that said they used to call him Tricky something.
Well, that's just cheesy.
Well, according to the director, it was considered too controversial for the time and was dropped.
This was 76. I mean, it's already done.
Well, yeah, but I mean, his presidency ended, what, 72?
2 years earlier.
74.
74.
Yeah, I guess it would have... Well, a different time, I guess. I guess that would have been considered too soon.
It's kind of the problem with the story and the film is the conservative bent that's just, I don't know, not really... Kind of stifling it, really.
Yeah. It too clearly has an agenda.
Yeah. It's not an agenda that's woven into something. Mm-hmm. It's just flat out, you know, these stupid kids, if they ran this shit, they would just kill all the old people. You know, it doesn't get more, I don't know, just blunt than that, really.
Yeah. And... I've seen the "What if kids ran the world" thing, and you know, you of course that's going to go, you know, badly. And
you're right.
21 makes more sense than 30, because if 30 was the cap, it could survive. If 21's the cap, there's problems. On the show Between, which is on Netflix, I watched that recently. There's a virus that kills everyone 22 or older, so you really have kids running this town, and it's a great illustration of, you know, what would happen in that situation. So anyway, back to the movie again. Logan, Jessica, and the old man come back to the city. He's going to try to liberate people.
Well, yeah, and that just seemed so out of the blue also.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, my friend here, the guy who, you know, was my buddy for all this time, has just obsessively hunted me down despite seeing this whole new world.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't even see past that and still tried to kill me. But hey, you know what's a good idea? Let's go back to people that didn't even feel that strongly about me, and let's try to explain to them everything we've seen without showing them first.
And Jessica says they'll kill you.
Right.
Flat out.
Of course.
And this is where I think it makes some interesting statements about religion, possibly. Because the first thing he gets there, he goes to the carousel ceremony, and he shouts, you know, it's not true, nobody's being reborn. Basically, there's no heaven.
Hmm.
And then, you know, he gets apprehended, of course, and they're probing his mind. And he really didn't find sanctuary. So he's not giving the computer the answer it wants. It's obsessed with finding sanctuary.
And yeah, that was a problem, too. Just the whole, does not compute.
Well, and when it finally, you know, gets through to the computer that there really is no sanctuary, it blows up. It's kind of like
a fallibility.
It has a crisis of faith.
Yeah.
It's so convinced that this thing is out there that when it's faced with the evidence that it's not, it has a meltdown.
I would more interpret this, though, as a faith in government, you know?
Mm, okay, yeah.
I think that, to me, that just fits in more with the rest of the theme.
Yeah, you're right.
That you to blindly follow your government, you know, are you just going to walk into the chamber on your own and give your life just because they're telling us it's the time to do it?
Did you catch the Wilhelm when everything was falling apart?
No.
The computer, you know, blows up and everything, the entire city starts to topple.
Of course.
And Logan and Jessica are kind of shooting their way out of the city, and there's this random Wilhelm in the middle of nowhere. I loved it.
There were a few scenes where they just had, like, terrible rubble.
Mm-hmm.
This was actually, the final collapse was better than the one battle scene where there was just rubble falling everywhere.
Yeah.
And it was obviously not real.
Mm-hmm. That was in the ice cave, because I have in my notes, right next to each other, surprisingly for its age, I can't complain about most of the effects, because I think most of the effects were really solid. Then the ice cave collapse happens, and that made up for all the other good effects.
Really? Well, of course, a tip here. If you're going to use a model, don't do a close-up of the model.
Yeah, no. Although the model at the very beginning, I think, was good.
It looked good at first. And then they came in for a close-up of the model.
Yeah.
And you pretty much started seeing, you know, the plasticness of it.
Mm-hmm. That opening shot actually reminded me a lot of Metropolis.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They pretty much borrowed heavily from it, I think. Of course, I should point out that Star Trek Next Generation episode Tapestry borrowed heavily from Logan's Run. It stars David Ogden Stiers, I almost said Charles Winchester.
Charles Winchester.
As a guy from a society who, you know, in which you have to die at a certain age. They pretty much took Logan's Run and inserted the Enterprise.
I think they pushed it to a good, like,
oh, yeah,
60
they, of course,
or something.
Improved on it. Oh, yeah, that's right. It was quite a bit older, because it was David Ogden Stiers in 93. So, yeah, he was probably about 60.
Or whatever age their alien species would get to that they would consider, you know, time to cut off.
Oh, speaking of television, apparently it spawned a short-lived 14-episode American TV version on CBS. It aired in 77 and 78. I vaguely remember this. I think I'm going to have to check YouTube.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
All right, I'm done with my notes.
I am too.
On to sequels and remakes.
Oh, wait a minute. One.
Okay.
I almost forgot one part. The trippiest part of the movie. The love room.
Oh, yes, yes. That was when I thought, you know, I'm always surprised by nudity in anything before the 80s. And apparently that was cut down. That was cut down for the censors, as was several characters visiting the Hallucinville in the arcade.
Wow. So I wonder when a director's version is going to come out of this.
Unfortunately, all of this footage was lost when the studio archives were throughout.
Out. It was before the time of DVDs. You never knew, yeah. You know, they never thought they were going to be releasing director's editions.
It's Kerkorian, not Kevorkian. Kirk Kerkorian, the studio owner at the time, sold off what he could of the studio's extensive archives and threw the rest out. It's the great MGM purge. So, yeah, there won't be a director's version or a, extended version.
Because, you know, surprisingly, for a two-hour movie, the pacing worked
pretty good.
It
took a bit too long to get out. It took like an hour. It took about half the movie to get outside.
Well, yeah. I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
I don't know. It seemed a little slow once they got out. Until they got to Ustinov.
Well, then it was kind of meandered once they got out. Then it was kind of like, what are we going to do now? We're going to go find this guy. And then what are we going to do? Oh, we'll go back.
That's when it became the Warriors.
Of course, the thing was, that's where it really departed from the original material.
Ah.
Because there is a sanctuary in the book.
Oh.
So all of that was like, it's way different.
Hmm. That's interesting. I wonder why that change was made.
Oh, it's the, from what I was reading, the book is way different. Hmm. It's still the same, reasoning behind it. Hmm. But it sounds like to me that they just didn't want to do the budget to actually do where Sanctuary was going to be.
Hmm. So they gave us a dilapidated DC.
Yeah.
With Peter Ustinov. Interesting.
Hint, it's a dilapidated Cape Canaveral.
Oh.
That leads to
the Sanctuary.
So
it was in a completely different part of the country, then.
Planet.
Well, country, because Cape Canaveral is in Florida, right?
Right.
Instead of they end up in D.C., they ended up in Florida.
And what happens in Cape Canaveral?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, that's interesting. I think I need to check out the book.
I think I do too, actually.
All right, now on to sequels and remakes. Now, according to a Variety article from July 22nd of this year, Warner Brothers is actually going forward with the remake. It was in development hell for quite a while. Simon Kinberg is on board to write the treatment. He also wrote the treatment for one of the upcoming Star Wars movies. Hmm. And he'll be producing alongside Joel Silver. No director is attached at the moment. I have a feeling it's probably going to slip back into development hell. If they don't have a director attached. Because there were like five directors attached at one time or another.
I think at this point it's kind of a blasé sort of plot.
Hmm.
You know, like The Island was similar to this too. In some ways, I mean, it was the fact that they were living in an isolated world that was a lie. But the difference there was they were being harvested as opposed to just being killed for no reason here.
Okay, that was the Island. I'd seen it years ago, but I couldn't remember what the plot was, why they ran.
Well, yeah, the deal with the Island was that they made it sound like there was a lottery that they were selected at random. When in reality,
I'm remembering now.
It was the person was using their clone as, you know, a thing to harvest organs for, mm-hmm, for them. Right.
The only Michael Bay movie I've ever liked.
You know, yeah, it got a really bum rap, but I liked it too. I remember liking it a lot.
All right, on to Brains.
On to Brains.
I was hovering at about a 3 for most of this movie. Because overall I liked it, but it wasn't really recommendation worthy.
I think I'm with you on it.
That Dem Ustinov showed up, and I'm going for. He bought it a brain for me.
I can't see recommending this, though. It's, it was good. It was something, you know, cool to sit through. I mean, don't get me wrong. It wasn't the full walkabout or anything. But, I'm going to give it a 3. For its time, it had some decent special effects. It had some decent acting. Although I think some people were completely wasted, like Richard Jordan.
Uh-huh. Roscoe Lee Brown in a robot suit.
Yeah, that scene could have really gone.
Yeah.
that really served no purpose.
Make him the old man. Now that would have, I mean, all, as much as I enjoyed Houston off, Roscoe Lee Brown in that role would have been amazing.
And I think I would definitely like to see a remake, though, this where they stick to the source material.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'll be checking the book out.
All right, what have we learned?
You know, crystals really make face palming hard.
Oh, yeah. That's got to hurt. And I learned that it's better to be over the hill than under it.
Whoa.
All right, so until 2 weeks from now, you need next week off again.
Yeah, for a real vacation this time.
Oh, okay.
I think I've earned it after these last 3 weeks.
Yeah. When we'll be reviewing Sharknado 3, finally starting our part three three-parter. Again, I'm going to leave that open to interpretation until we get to it, although it shouldn't
That's
be
nice
hard
ring
to
it,
explain.
Part three three-parter.
Yeah, it's kind of a palindrome thing. I thought of it at the spur of the moment last week.
It's like I.
Hmm. Well, of course, if you look at the three movies in the trilogy, you'll probably figure out what that means.
I think so, yeah.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all of the listeners we have, but more would be better. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, up through the trilogy, and I was going to throw Logan's Run in after the trilogy. Obviously, we moved it forward. We need to pad that out a bit after the trilogy.
I think there could be... We're almost up to a trilogy of tributes if we could ever get that Roddy Piper movie in.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Once we get that, it might be interesting. Depends, because...
We've lost Wes Craven
now.
Yeah,
the Craven trilogy. The Craven tribute can only last so long. Can only wait so long, I should say.
Yeah, and then... I'm sure someone else is going to go.
And, of course, the request form. If, like Roberto, who requested this movie, you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, leave it on the request form. We'll get to it. And the recommendations list. Going in, I was sure this was going to make the rec list.
Me too. I was kind of disappointed.
It's kind of a seminal classic. I mean, it got bad reviews, but Ebert kind of hated it. But it's so, you know, highly regarded among science fiction that I was sure it was a lock, so I was kind of surprised, but I didn't even want to put it there till Ustinov showed up.
I can understand people loving it, and I can also understand people hating it, too.
Yeah. Clearly, we're both kind of in the middle, except for Ustinov in my case. You can also email us zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged.
They can be fish food.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
I don't want to say any more, but I hope that is understood.
Never turn your back on them. The devil.
So, what was the line again?
Word is bond. Where should we take them from?
I'll just take word is bond.
Okay.